It had been the day after we visited Pompeii and Herculaneum. We walked amongst relics and reflections of the past. Sparrows resting on first century structures, cats asleep on marble columns. It seems that some residents remain the same. Thousands of visitors snap photos in peristyliums. Children gaze in awe at an empty amphitheatre as they imagine themselves battling wild beasts and slaying trident-wielding gladiators. As for us, the nerds, we got excited about carbonized wooden beams and doors. Oh, and lest we forget, the opening of a new archaeological area which puts the entire excavation experience at the front line, as we hovered above the team uncovering history as we watched. Could this have been the highlight of the trip to Naples and Amalfi? Perfect experiences, yet they lacked something. Heart, soul, spirit. On which we would experience the next day. On Saturday, we rose early to meet a lady by the name of Silvia, as passionate as ever. The booking was for a theatrical experience of Naples and its people. How lucky were we to experience this with the heart of Silvia, our guide. From the over-the-top Baroque Teatro di San Carlo to sit-down discussion over a properly made espresso underneath the filtered sky of Galleria Umberto. We discussed Totò, we listened to traditional music and teased each other with Commedia dell'arte. A special treat was in store, one which she would not reveal just yet. But alas, whilst on the way to such a surprise, a name came up, a man who I am a little too familiar with by now. Whilst in Naples my aim was to tick off the seven works of mercy, that experience was triumphant and has been engraved in my soul, but it was unexpected. A sight which, although I thought of, seemed to be out of reach. Where was Caravaggio's face cut open? Many possible answers went through my mind. Was it a 2-hour drive or a 40-minute walk? And lo and behold, to my surprise, Silvia says in her Neapolitan accent, "It's on the way." We walked for 10 minutes past a busy road paraded with vespas and orchestrated with pumping horns. The architecture kept changing from the 18th century to Art Deco until we came to a crossing and one of the shadiest looking valleys. This was morning. The sun lit it up well. The cobbles looked familiar, yet the scene was alien. How does it look at night? We walked past and found the very same place, Osteria del Cerilio, an old inn and tavern which the legend himself, Michelangelo Merisi da Caravaggio, would frequent. A place where he, on one specific night, would be assaulted. How? When? After Caravaggio's escape from Malta and his short period in Sicily, the overextending hand of the Order of the Knights of St. John was ever so present. Sicily was flooded with knights, and just as he headed up to Messina to get further away, he would encounter Fra Martelli on his visit to Messina. Coincidence? Most probably, yet still his presence made Merisi all more anxious, especially since he once portrayed Martelli in the famous portrait of a knight. From Messina, he slipped into Naples, aiming to return to Rome for a possible second pardon in the works. Yet in Naples, where fate once smiled upon him, outside this very tavern, amidst brothers and courtesans, 4 men make their way towards the artist. They signal each other that this is the right man, and they beat him up. Glass shatters, wine spills, chaos ensues. Caravaggio lies on the ground trying to crawl away, like the rat slipped from corner to corner of this dirty alley from this brutal fight. His hands slip on the wine he spilt, but soon enough he is picked up and pinned to the wall, his face towards the assailant. Blurry vision, intoxicated mind, collapsing body. Michele has no strength to fight back. The gang smiles. The leader reaches for his belt and out of a scabbard he takes out a dagger. He runs it down Caravaggio's face and slowly, painfully, pierces his skin. An esfregio, a permanent cut, meaning, "You have insulted my honor, and if you know what's good for you, you won't do it again." And a pool of blood, his own blood. Merisi lies crawled up on the ground as if he were the Baptist in his most famous of beheadings. Friends, Greetings, Romans, countrymen, welcome to the final episode of Caro Caravaggio, a radio program where we delved into the works of Michelangelo. No, not that one, the other one, Merisi. Oh, that is Gimalda. In the introduction of today's episode, we went super nostalgic, a research trip slash holiday in Amalfi and Naples, where my friends and I got to enjoy so many different sights. From Teatro di San Carlo, Pompeii, the Amalfi Coast, Sorrento, under very expensive lemons, and then ending up in the heart of Naples under the protection of San Gennaro. What a trip. Unforgettable for many reasons, and this led me to researching the last moments and days of Caravaggio right there in Naples, before he would meet his end on July 18th of 1610. However, my dear friends, let us not dilly-dally any longer. Today's episode, we are feeling rather romantically Italian. And so, put on your headphones, turn up the volume, select the sepia filter, and let us explore on Campus 103.7 his last painting, The Martyrdom of Saint Ursula, as Caravaggio returns to Naples.
A boy went back to Napoli because he missed the scenery, the native dancers, and the charming songs. But wait a minute, something's wrong. Hey, hey, now it's a mambo, mambo Italiano, a mambo, mambo Italiano, go, go, Joe. You mixed up Siciliano, or you calabrese, do the mambo like crazy, and hey, che se dice get a happy in the pizza when you mambo Italiano. Shake a baby, shake a cause of love when you take me in. Hey, Giorgio, you don't have to go to school, just make a little beep bomb beep. You're good looking, but you don't know what's a cook until you hit. Shake a baby, shake a cause I love her when you're taking me by the pizzeria. That's where I'm gonna be. Don't you tell your mama, mama's gonna tell her papa. There's nothing to it, come on baby, let's do it. Hey, mambo, mambo. You mixed up Siciliano, it's so delicious. Everybody gonna get fish out of mambo Italiano.
And we are back for the finale, episode 13, The Martyrdom of Saint Ursula. So at this point, Michelangelo will soon meet his end, an unlucky end, just he was about to secure another papal pardon. The man was on a roll with all of these favours, but now let us stretch out the canvas for the series on Campus 103.7 with your host, Jeremy Grech. This painting was a private commission, a painting done as a favour to a Genovese nobleman, Marcantonio Doria, Prince of Angri, who helped Caravaggio get out of some trouble. By trouble, we mean Michelangelo attacking another man with a hatchet in Piazza Navona. But anyway, his daughter was about to become a nun and take on the name of Ursula. Hence, the commission would make so much sense. Not a big church commission. The last one would be a direct private commission. And what do we have here? Restricted by size, standing only at 143 centimeters in height and 180 centimeters in width. Once again, we have a traditional oil on canvas. Now, where are we? The Virgin Princess Ursula was on her way from Rome to Cologne with 11,000 virgins. It is here where they encounter the Huns. Smitten by her fair looks, she is invited into the main tent where the Prince of the Huns requests her hand in marriage. But no, she cannot. Her fate denies this. Her devotion cannot be tainted, and thus she refuses. And just like that, the prince shoots an arrow at point blank, piercing the chest of Ursula, completing her journey and finally becoming a martyr. There are four men in the painting, and one female as the lead. The background is heavily draped, not rich and vibrant, but dim and almost at a brownish-red hue. The light, probably coming in from a lantern, is dim also. Traditionally, for one last time, the light shines from the left to the right, as does the action of the scene, from where the arrow shall come. We meet the first character on the left of the canvas, the sinister Hun prince, who wears a red tunic underneath fancy armor. On his shining breastplate, we see a lion embossed under the neckline. Decorations, almost as if remembering the armor of Grandmaster Wignacourt, is leaved with gold. A ceremonial suit, for sure. In his left hand, he holds a Hungarian recurve bow. The prince's hands are counterpositioned and bent. His action is a reaction to him setting loose the arrow. He gives us a look of surprise as his right cheek, lit by the lantern, shows not anger, but almost a little bit of sorrow. His hat flows with motion and his feathers carry the weight to the right of the Hun. Next to him, at the back, is a younger man, moving towards his direction as if to stop him. Not much can be seen of this man, but his face is fixed on the Hun, and with his arms completely covered by the female protagonist, is about to touch the bow and perhaps even shield Ursula. But he is late. In the center is the princess. Her features are pale, youthful still, but death has already kissed her. She wears a grey tunic, and a red drape hugs her from her right shoulder across to her waist. Her chest has been pierced, an arrow which at such range has deeply leaned into her body. Her two grey hands spread her chest to see the wound. Her face, surprised. Her muscles are about to tense up and reveal the moment when she would turn her head up to the Hun and give him a piercing, painful look. But for now, she focuses on the arrow as she comes to terms with her martyrdom. Of her left shoulder, as we lean to the right of the canvas, one third of a fully armored soldier can be seen, as if he is about to pounce on Ursula. It's catastrophic. Only his left arm is in view, and his helmet and bearded left cheek. Behind them, though, is the last reveal, a final picture. Wedged in a small opening between Ursula and the armored soldier, we have a final glimpse to the almost yellowish face of Caravaggio. His hair is short. His expression is of surprise. A spectator, or a pilgrim too, perhaps. Or what if he is shouting? No scars on his face can be seen. Could this be the other side? But wait, here we find an uncomfortable hand holding a stick very close to Caravaggio's face, which comes out from the figure stepping towards the bow. A hidden message, perhaps, alluding to this disaster which unfolded only weeks before he painted this, his final portrait. An idealized version of himself where he lets his unconditional muse craft a final masterpiece.
A candy-colored clown they call the Sandman, tiptoes to my room every night, just to sprinkle stardust and to whisper, go to sleep, everything is all right. I close my eyes, then I drift away. Like dreamers do.
it. I can't help it if I try.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back for the very, very, very last time for the final segment of Caro Caravaggio on Campus 103.7 with your host, Jeremy Grech. As today is so close to Christmas, we come to an end and wrap this radio show up. But before we say our farewells, let us close off the Merisi chapter. What happened after? Michelangelo was awaiting his second pardon. Sometimes, though, through research, it is either stated that it was one pardon or two. But let's not forget that research tells us that here in Malta, he did get the pardon before he became a Knight of St. John. However, resources and certain scholars, maybe some updates here and there would be needed. But here he was on his way to Rome. He was docked in Palo, where on this felucca, which is a type of ship, he had all of his belongings, including three paintings. Just as he stepped off the boat, he was, for once at least, actually mistakenly arrested. Apparently, he spent around 2 days in prison, which by the time he got out of jail, the ship had already been long gone, making its way to Porto Ercole. Now, this allowed the ship to obviously continue its journey with all of Michelangelo's stuff on it, so as soon as he got out, he chased this ship. All to collapse in Porto Ercole and end his life in 1610. The death of Caravaggio is recorded on the 18th of July of 1610, and there are plenty of theories as to how he could have died. Some say that it could have been malaria that actually got to him. Others do debate that this man was still not fully recovered after having his face cut open, and maybe it was infection or even the exhaustion from not recovering. Some allude to perhaps the Tommasonis with Caravaggio's return heading over to Rome. Maybe they wanted to settle their score for their dead brother. Or maybe it would have been Fra Roero Rodomonte, who some say maybe it was him that actually cut open his face in Naples. But these are all speculations. One of my favorite theories, though, has to be poison. The poison of lead, which used to mostly come from his pigmentation. It is stated that Caravaggio, as well as other artists at the time, had a nasty habit of licking their paintbrush, which allows them to then inhale it, eat it up, and so causes apparently some madness, some disease. I would like to read a little bit more about that because it looks very, very interesting. Well, as I stated, the date of his death was the 18th of July, and at this point, what I would love to go through is a poem that I actually just found. A poet by the name of Gian Battista Marino wrote for his friend who was Michelangelo Merisi these words. Now, in the book it states that this was during the funeral, however, I am not sure about the funeral of Caravaggio, because when I did some further research, nothing truly came up. But these words are what were written in one of the biographies of Caravaggio. Death and nature made a cruel plot against you, Michele. Nature was afraid. Your hand would surpass it in every image. You created, not painted. And with that, my dear friends, it was honestly a true pleasure to host this program. It was an honor and a bucket list checkpoint or check off, whatever they call it. And at this point, you have no idea the effort, the energy, the heart that went into creating these 13 episodes. A bit of a challenge at first because I had no idea how to go about it, how to present these paintings to the viewers. But I do hope that you've truly enjoyed this series. And obviously a big thank you to all those who helped and supported in making these episodes happen, especially Redent and Mark for their patience with recording, as well as the other staff and team members of Campus 103.7. I have some other projects planned for the radio, so this is hopefully not the end, but let us keep those curtains closed until we reveal more details in the future. Till then, friends, Romans, countrymen, thank you for lending your ears for one last time. This was your host, Jeremy Grech, on Campus 103.7, bringing you the artworks of Caravaggio on the airwaves, as we wish you now a festive season like no other.